Something historic happened at the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympic Games, and nobody ever talks about it. Never before had all four competitors from the same nation in one competition been named the same. The 2022 women's slalom at the Winter Olympics featured an Austrian slalom team only named Katarina. Katarina Truppe, Katarina Huber, Katarina Gallhuber, and Katarina Linsberger, who actually took home the silver medal. Same spellings. What do you do in that scenario? You say Katarina and four people turn their head? How many different nicknames are there for Katarina? Like, two? That leaves you with two people still named Katarina. If your name is Katarina and you live in Austria and you're between the ages of 20 and 30, there's like a 30% chance that you already went to the Olympics. You could call that slalom race the Katarina Wine Mixer. Okay. All right, let's get started. And we are back. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and welcome to Arc City. Arc City is presented by Ski Racing Media, and this episode is sponsored by On Location. Also, a shout out to Sync Performance and the World Cup Dreams Foundation for supporting me this season. Sasha Rierich spent 18 years working for the U.S. ski team. Before that, he got a degree in exercise science, got certified as a ski instructor in France, which is not an easy process, and worked at the Green Mountain Valley School for 3 years. Once at the U.S. ski team, he worked at every level, including Europa Cup, World Cup. He was the head men's coach for a while, and ultimately the development program coach, which is where he coached me. Nowadays, he's coaching at Apex 2100, which is in Teen, France. And from what I've heard, the program is doing really well and attracting a lot of young athletes. But more important than his resume, and the biggest reason why I have him here today, is that he has a huge passion for the sport of ski racing, and he's done a lot of thinking about the sport as well. So, without further ado, Sasha Rierich. Welcome to Arc City.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. It's been too long since we've been able to catch up.
I know. It's been way too long. As we were saying before I started recording, it's been a long time. I saw you briefly at Val d'Isère. That World Cup didn't happen, but I think the last time before that was probably before I broke my leg, honestly, something like that, years ago. For the people listening, you were my coach maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, the year that I skied for Dartmouth, and I wasn't on the team, but the US team was doing that like NDG group thing. I guess we can just start there because we're talking about that. What was that like? You were head coach of the US team, and then you ended up with this weird project of some D team development idea that the US ski team had like 5 years ago.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. It was Project 26, and the idea was how do we re-stimulate, you know, across the country development? And there'd been a couple of years in a row where we had kind of always done the same thing, and we were kind of expecting this, you know, a different result. And so there was good research that was done by a lot of great people to try to figure out what was working, what didn't work. And then they had asked me to kind of run it on the men's side, and I was looking for a change. You know, after 10 years full time at every World Cup race, doing something different and being able to give back to the sport in a different way was something that I was looking for. So I was super stoked to take that project on. It was really to try to stimulate the clubs and the regions to have greater urgency in practice and what to work on. And we invited athletes in, and they got to have a taste of it, and they went back to their home club and got to bring that what they learned back to their home club. We had a bunch of coaches, different coaches coming in and out to do the same thing. And you know, the athletes that were named to the D team, they were basically guaranteed every camp. And everybody else, like you in that case, was just like, you know, camp by camp, if you're working hard and doing the right thing, get to come back. And you know, some projects were 12 athletes, some projects were really big and 40 athletes and 10, 12 coaches. I mean, I think from a prep period point of view, being able to kind of stimulate and learn and work together as a community. I thought it was fantastic and I loved every minute of it.
It was fun. I like that format, that kind of boot camp format. We showed up in Hood, and I think there was like 40 kids at Hood in June. And it was we had maybe 200 gates on the hill, 300 gates on the hill. We had that 100 gate course. There some kids just couldn't handle it. Some kids had never skied that much in their life. I guess there's so much I want to talk to you about, but maybe just the thing I remember most from that period with you was the, several things, but the drill courses, like we did a million different types of courses, 17 meter GS, straight GS, 100 gate slalom courses, courses on the rolls, brushes, literally everything you could think of. Where did you get those ideas, and why do you think, like, what's the philosophy behind all of those? I think you call them constraint courses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, the philosophy came by, you know, having worked with, you know, different athletes that had won Olympic medals and World Cups, you know, from Bodie Miller to Ted Ligety to Andrew Weibrecht. They skied very differently. Their technique was very different. Their style was different. But I realized, you know, in the great opportunity that I had in the great time, it was like those athletes expressed themselves completely differently. And every time I tried to teach the technique of, you know, Ted Ligety to the nation, it would work for a couple, but most it didn't work. And I realized that there's another way to go about this. And really what was important was understanding clearly the cornerstones of sport, what leads to fast ski racing. And that's pressure in the fall line, reducing drag, and the line that's, you know, the most direct path as possible, with still doing those two other things.
Wait, can I just stop you right there? Because I feel like that was something you drilled into us. I'm sure there are coaches out there will disagree, but I feel like you always said, these are the three things that make you fast. Can you repeat them?
Yeah. So pressure in the fall line. If you pressure the skis in the fall line, you're going to maintain speed. You pressure against the fall line, you're going to slow down. And if you can pressure before the fall line, which what Odermatt is doing right now in GS, amazingly, is why he's beating everybody easily. Even when he makes mistakes, it's no problem. You reduce drag, so if the skis are, you know, friction on the snow is going to slow you down. There's times where you need to slow down to be able to maintain the rhythm and timing of the hill, but for the most part, you have to reduce the amount of slowing down you're doing. And then the last one is reducing the distance traveled. I mean, if you ski a round line versus someone who's skiing a straighter line, I mean, you know, basic math, you know, from basic algebra, the train that's going shorter distance is going to get there faster.
Yeah.
And if you look at World Cup skiing now, I mean, I remember watching Valdezere 3 years ago, having not been really at a World Cup slalom in 3 years, and going, oh my God. I mean, the top five, six guys in the world, I mean, they are going super direct. The line that they're carrying is unbelievable. And, you know, it's there. So those three things are the cornerstones. And if you understand that, each athlete, how they're going to do it, based on their morphology, their style, their personality, their equipment, and the snow and the course set, they're going to find different solutions to get there. They're going to find their own unique solutions to get there. And really, you know, so I said, okay, well, let's create environments where athletes can learn that. And then the real skill is, okay, are you adaptable? And, you know, what I saw the first year, especially that year you're talking about, you know, most of the athletes that were coming out of camp were out of bounds. So we were just trying to get athletes into balance and having an active weight transfer from one foot to the other. I mean, that was the main goal. And basically, instead of saying, okay, get forward, do this, duck to duck, just put them in environments and let them express themselves and fall down a lot, let them struggle a lot. And through that, they were going to get balanced. Once you're balanced, then you can work on rhythm and timing and adjusting rhythm and timing so you can do those cornerstones. And that was really the goal of that, you know, first year. As the years progressed and athletes had more, let's say, fundamental skills to express themselves freely, we then worked much more on how do you generate speed. You know, that's another skill that was needed.
Mm-hmm. When you always talk about athletes expressing themselves, and I think it's a unique philosophy. And I don't know if it's at odds with maybe a more European philosophy of this is technique and you teach everyone the same technique and that's how it is. But can you talk a bit more about your idea of expressing yourself on skis?
Yeah, and I think there are some fun, which the Europeans do such a great job of. And I think that's one of the things that I've learned in my time in Europe is teaching basic fundamentals. You know, we ski on the outside ski, we have an active weight transfer from one ski to the other. The lower legs engage, the upper body is stable, is disciplined. So if I need to rotate, I can rotate. If I need to counter, I can counter. You know, it's disciplined. You know, there's a pole plant in slalom. Those are fundamentals that I think are important. But beyond that, the technique of how you move and all that is unique to each individual athlete. And you look at a great artist, they have the fundamentals of, you know, playing the piano or painting. But then the ones that do something special, they express themselves in a different way. And they've had that fundamental, but then they've also been encouraged to push the limits of what they're doing. And I think in anything you do, that's fun. And allowing the athletes to go and try that and to go there is what's going to create champions in the future. And it might not be just in ski racing. It might be in other things they're going to do in life.
Yeah, definitely. I've talked to Tommy Ford, and Tommy Ford has this idea in his head of, you know, his GS as a form of art. I know you've talked about, I think you had a story about Bodhi at the Olympics, or just Bodhi in big races, and he was always determined to go out there and express himself, and it was less about the winning.
Yeah, I mean, Bodhi was, besides three or four races where he was really cared about the result, he wanted to lay down his best turns, his best way that he could approach the mountain. He was amazing. And I clearly learned a lot of this, you know, idea of expression from him. But his whole thing was he wanted to put down the best run, push the limits of what he thought was possible, and bring all the skills he had and all the, you know, knowledge of equipment and push it to the max. And when he did that, I saw him once in Krenzke Gore get fourth, and he was ecstatic. He was like, that run there was it. That was amazing. And I'm like, you just got fourth. And you're like, you're not on the podium. You could have been on the podium. And he's like, no, that was amazing. Those guys outbeat me. It's okay. And I think that was, you know, his strength was then why he pushed the sport to so great limits. You know, I mean, what he did, you know, everybody else was trying to catch up for many years. And it was because of that mentality. There are a couple races where he definitely cared about winning and he didn't win and he didn't express himself, you know, as he could. And I think, you know, that was what he went, you know, avoided trying to do most of his career. And, you know, I think all athletes struggle with that is like, how do you focus on the process and not worry about the outcome? And, you know, he was remarkably good at it for most of his career.
Can you remember one specific instance of maybe the best skiing you've ever seen from Bodhi? Best competition?
I mean, the training runs at the Olympics in 2014 were pretty impressive. 2010, excuse me, 2010 in Sochi.
Sochi.
Those two training runs, how he skied the top of the downhill there on that train and the hard snow and everything was amazing. You know, that was some phenomenal skiing. I think when the cut skis came out and he was boot topping slalom. I mean, I still have those images in my head from 2002 when he was, you know, he took the sport to a different place in that time.
When he was the first one to really use the shaped skis, like the aggressive side cut.
Yeah, the shaped skis. And you know, there was other people doing it, but then he just took the line so much more aggressive and so much cleaner. So what did he do? He shortened the distance and he reduced drag to just an extreme amount. And, you know, I think that was, you know, inspiring to me. And, you know, I think in GS, when it was really straight GS and open GS, I mean, what he was doing, he was skiing GS almost like super G. And that was a period of time where he was just, it was impressive what he was doing. He was having to slow down because he was going so fast. I remember sitting on video, why are you doing that every second turn? He's like, I got to slow down. I'm going too fast. I got to stay with the course. You know?
Yeah. And that was your early years of coaching when you were coaching Bodhi, huh? Like you were kind of learning, you're getting your coaching chops as you were coaching him.
I mean, initially when I first joined the US ski team, I was more on the conditioning side and I was with the World Cup and he was, you know, bouncing between slalom and GS and downhill and super G. So I spent doing more of the conditioning side with him. And then he left to do his own thing with Team America. And then by the time he came back, I'd been, you know, became the head coach in 2008, 2009. And then that later that second year, right before the Olympics, he decided to come back to the national team. And we worked out something, and he came back. And I'd say that, you know, myself and Forrest and Uncle Mike worked with him.
Gotcha. Well, I guess we could, you know, talk Bodie stories all day, but you coached a lot of other guys. Who was someone else you learned a lot from?
Jimmy Cochran, I would say, is probably the athlete that I learned probably the most on when I was a really young coach. I mean, everything I said, he would challenge. He would challenge me. Why is that? Why is that important? Why is that important? So I had to, like, everything. I had to, like, go back to the physics point of view, biomechanics point of view, psychological point of view, especially biomechanics and physics, because Jimmy was so strong that Jimmy Cochran was just, like, you know, just questioned everything. And it made me better. It made me way better. Just working with him and really diagnosing and looking at the sport from different perspective. And you know, Jimmy was not the strongest, physically strongest athlete. He wasn't the most powerful, but so he had to learn to ski really efficiently. And you know, going through that, just learned a different ways of coaching that would, I thought, really help for the rest of my career.
That's cool. You always told us about the heart, mind, and balls. Do you still talk about that?
I do occasionally. You know, I have to be a little more PC correct and work in an environment like Apex in school where we have U12s, U14s, U16s. I'm coaching men and women now, working with men and women now. So, and, you know, but heart is that intrinsic motivation. And there's clearly, like, you know, if you're intrinsically motivated, you're going to go farther and you're going to enjoy this process much better. You know, the balls is courage to commit to something, courage to go down the hill, courage to make mistakes, to be willing to make mistakes. I think that's one of the things that, you know, young people so often, they're so worried about making a mistake, or they beat themselves up, and they don't put themselves out there because they're so worried that people are going to judge them. And it's just like, whoa, if you're going to be good at anything, you're going to fall down, you know, 100 times. And, you know, if you got the heart, you're going to get up 101 times. And just like enjoy that. And I think and what's really cool is, I think if you just start talking about it, that, hey, you know, mistakes is part of how you learn. And you all of a sudden you're willing to go there. And that is how we've been helping people gain courage. And the mind is just, you know, where do you bring your focus? And I think right now we're such a distracted in generally, you know, we're distracted. Oh, I need to do this. I need to do this. And if you can just get people to say, here's where I need to put my energy. Here's where I need to put my focus. Let's bring tremendous urgency to that focus, where we're going to get better is helps people so much. And you know, the mind is, when the competition comes in, the stress comes in, notice it, say, okay, I'm stressed. That's okay. That's not me. That's just my mind. It means that I'm excited. Take that energy in and build it up, and put your focus on something clear that's going to help you do better on that day, whatever you may be doing. So yeah, heart, mind, and courage is where
that's the new word.
That's the new way to say it. The PC way to say it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it still is. And I watch all you former guys that I loved to death that I've worked with over the years. And at times I'm, you know, in the background, God damn it, they're not doing enough of this. And it's usually one of those two of those things. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, skiing's a sport that takes all three. You can't just, I just feel like there are some days where your skiing comes from somewhere else. The skiing comes from the heart. It's not coming from the mind, or the skiing comes from here or there. There's just a lot more. There's a lot more of your skiing comes from a lot more of you as a person than it does of just you as a robot that you're trying to program.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say that that's the biggest thing that I've gained in perspective in the last couple of years is, you know, I go to different age groups and different athletes and completely different ability levels. And I see that there's so much more to someone enjoying the learning process and how much they learn or how they can perform. That's beyond technical. It's how they feel in the group, the emotional side, you know, social, like we, you know, we talk about physical health, talk about emotional health, but what about social health? You get the right group of people together, there's dynamicism, and they're pushing each other and challenging each other in a fun way. the last thing you want to do is talk about technique because that's going to get in the way.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I was just telling
you, look at the French downhill team right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that talk about social, just fun, joy. I mean, they're amazing right now. It's so fun to watch.
So cool. I mean, Sarrazin is just crushing it. And he has, what, 1 year of downhill experience in the World Cup? It's insane to watch. And I've experienced a bit of that. My last year at World Juniors, we just somehow cultivated a great team atmosphere. And it was just about going out there and competing as hard as we could with our team. And it's amazing how quickly you can go from, I went from not remembering how to ski slalom to suddenly everything was clicking. And it wasn't like I did anything special. It was just kind of feeling that camaraderie and finding that purpose.
Absolutely. It's so powerful. It's so powerful. I mean, that was such a fun World Champs with you and River and Ben Ritchie and a bunch of other guys, and just seeing you guys feed off the energy of each other. And as a coach, I just had to sit back and smile and enjoy. We didn't have to do anything that week. You guys did all the work. We did the work to help you get there before, but that week there was just the energy you built off each other was amazing. And yeah, I'll never forget that week.
That was fun. Yeah. As a coach, how much role do you think a coach can play in cultivating that sort of team atmosphere?
I mean, I think, you know, it's funny because one of our head fist coaches and I were talking about this just yesterday. And I think, you know, when I look back on my career where there's been really that good culture, that really positive vibe through the group, it's really coach and athlete working together. And it's not, you know, the athlete gives energy to the coach and the coach gives energy to the athlete. And in the same time, it's when you have a serviceman, it's the serviceman too. And the physio, and everybody gives energy to everybody. And it builds momentum and it builds him. So I think it's building an environment step by step where, you know, you can, the athlete feels comfortable giving that energy or bringing the energy, and the coach also feels comfortable. When you struggle with that, that's when, you know, a coach can step up and has to step up. You know, when the thing is spiraling down, you know, that's when good coaches really can go, okay, here's where we are. We got to change. We got to change direction. We got to go somewhere else and do something else. And, you know, that's the powerful of a really good coach who can redirect that energy. And, you know, you look at great coaches, just sometimes they can do it, sometimes they can't do it. And, you know, it's a challenge.
Yeah. Sorry, my internet connection was a little bit slow for a second there, but I did catch what you said. And I fully agree. Like, I've always felt that you find out the true, with an athlete and with a coach, you find out how good they really are when you go through a really tough time. Because some coaches start to ignore you and some coaches try to help you out, and it's a very clear distinction. You know,
absolutely. I mean, it's like, you know, and that's when I kind of used to be like the days where we just sucked, we got our ass handed to us. I used to just smile and be like, all right, today's my day that I have to do my job. How am I going to do my job today? And where am I going to bring the energy? Where am I going to bring the enthusiasm? Or where am I going to bring the hard ass accountability guy? And that's where I would always, like, I rejoiced in that moment. It was not easy. It was easier just to, you know, be there on the celebration days and hear the national anthem playing. But, you know, when those hard moments, when you really get your, you know, your teeth pounded in, okay, what are we going to do to change the momentum here? We have to do something.
And now a message from On Location. What are you doing next summer? How about an unforgettable trip to the Olympic Games Paris 2024? Let us plan your perfect trip to watch the world's best athletes from premium seats with exclusive access to hospitality lounges in the stadium, along with tailored accommodation, tours, and more. Visit hospitalitytravelpackages.paris2024.org for more info. You know, I was thinking about, we were talking about the drill course, and I have to ask you, just to circle back quickly, we had this day in New Zealand where it was paneled slalom. You had brushes in the ground to determine our line to go deep enough. I think you had Dai as well to tell us where to start the turn. We had these, I think we had bands in our hands. And then we also had this forward ski device, which you put in the front of your boots, and it was linked to a little electronic device with AirPod, like earphones, and it would beep if you weren't on the front of the boot. And it was, we had to do all of this stuff all at once. And I remember just almost throwing my hands up like, okay, Sasha, I was bought into your whole project, but at this point, I don't know if I can support it anymore. Do you still stand by that day?
Oh yeah. No. That was clearly a great example of a coach just going way too far, making a mistake. You know, I tried to put too much in you guys all at one time, and that was a clear mistake. And I went like, okay, stop, start, learn from it, and let's get better. And yes, was that a over-challenging day that didn't work? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
just found the limit that day. Yeah.
We went way too far beyond the limit that day.
But it was still, the effort was fun regardless. But I'm sure like you've had a lot of mistakes over the years as you've gained more experience. Like, can you think back on, are there any regrets you have or feelings of like, oh, that was a really big mistake, or maybe I let that athlete down or something like that?
I mean, I think, yes, there's moments of where I would say that, you know, every single day you go, okay, this worked, this didn't work. Okay, here's how we get better. And I think that's, you know, that's the main thing that my philosophy is, like, every single day we are going to find a way to get better. And let's get better together. So when I look back on my career, I think, you know, every single day, there's things that, you know, I go, yeah, we should have done this better. And that's how I've learned. And I continue to learn. That's why I love the sport so much, because you have this opportunity to just go, okay. And I don't dwell on those mistakes. I don't regret those mistakes, because I think every single one of those times is just like an opportunity for an athlete to gain new perspective, gain new opportunities, and for us to go, okay, this is where we have to put greater effort.
Mm-hmm. Along that line, you know, I'm a Patriots fan, and I've watched the Patriots go from legendary history-making status to horrible in the past few years. And it's been the same coach. And there's this huge debate that always goes on of, is it the coaches or the athletes that really make a team? And in a sport like football, you know, maybe it's more of the coach, which is why coaches get fired if a team isn't doing well. But how much of it do you think, like, how much change can a good coach make, and how much responsibility do they have for the success of their athletes?
I mean, I think it's like an engine. You know, you have to have the cylinders going, and you have to have the timing belt going, and you need the spark. And I think that, you know, the head coach of a program is kind of that timing belt. So it's the cylinder that's making sure that everything's running on time, and it's got some spark. But you need the athletes to be, you know, the cylinders need to be firing, cranking. They need to work together. And if all of a sudden it's not working together, you know, you can't just dump all the athletes. Sometimes you just need to change the coach, and it's just a different stimulus that's going to make an effect. If the stimulus has been there too long, people get stale. And I think coaches, you know, I think really good coaches understand that's part of it. At the same time, athletes need to be willing to adapt and change and get pushed and challenged. You know, too oftentimes athletes are like, no, I know exactly what I need to do. This is what I need to do to get work. You know, a coach's role is to take an athlete from where they are and help them get to a place that they can't do on their own. So the athlete also has to be willing and you know, be able to get on that ride with the coach. So, you know, this blanket statement saying it's just the coach or just the athlete's not a fair.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, I think too oftentimes, you know, the coach needs to come in and build respect and build, it takes time. And depending on the history of the coach and stuff like that, it takes from understanding that, you know, each athlete's going to be different. Each athlete's on their own unique journey. And you know, you're going to have to work with different athletes in different ways. And you know, I would say that I've been very blessed and fortunate to work with a lot of athletes that have been made themselves available to want to learn and work with me. You know, I worked with some coaches for, or some athletes for a long time. I'm not going to say their names, but there's, you know, they were a struggle. They were a struggle, and mainly because they were not available to get on that ride to go where they, where I thought they could go. And other guys, you know, like yourself was one of the guys who was just like, all right, let's go. Let's get on this road. And I remember you getting really pissed at me. I remember, I'll never forget. I used to change the course every three runs. Yeah. And you were just like, this sucks. I can't get any good feelings. And I'm like, I don't care. You know, learn to adapt. And at the end of the year, you came to me. You're like, I think you did really, really well in slalom that year, every course. And you're like, now I get it. And but the reason I was able to do that with you was because you were willing to take that risk with me. And yeah, you also were willing to express it to me. And I was able to either, you know, try to tell you why I was doing it or just go, just shut up and do it. I mean, let's go. I don't remember where we ended up on that spectrum of it, but you know, other athletes were just like, you know, with Ben Ritchie, it was really tough for him to get on that bandwagon. But then all of a sudden he was like, oh, I get it. And then he fully bought into it. So sometimes athletes are like, you know, immediately do it. Others takes time.
Yeah, no, that year there was, I was fully bought in, but there were definitely moments of doubt. I remember, I think we were a couple days out from our first races in Colorado and we were skiing GS, tight GS on Super G skis. And I was so aggravated of like, what? It's, we're racing soon. This is a terrible feeling. I can't believe, but I think I did tell you the times when I was, when I didn't know why we were doing something. And I think you gave a good enough answer where I said, okay, I'll put my head down and do it. And it did end up benefiting me in the end immensely. So, yeah, it was funny though. Like if you, if you're a coach, I think it probably takes some courage to think outside the box a bit because you have to get your athletes to buy in and that's half the process.
Yeah. And when you're pushing the limits, you know, like you're going to make mistakes as a coach. Like I clearly did on that day. I had you skiing with forward ski and the bands and the lines and everything. That was, I was a little too amped up, excited, which is, as most people who know me, that that happens on occasion.
Speaking of the forward ski, do you still use that?
I do. I do. I've been babying a few of them that are left. They don't make them anymore.
Oh, really?
And I do. I still use them on occasion. You know, what, one thing I found is that skiing in Europe and the type of stuff we're doing, there's much less need of it because I'm using these other environments, which gets the athletes to engage their lower leg. So there's much less need of it.
Can you expand on that? Like you're saying that there's like steeper or courses or more icy snow. Is that what you're saying in Europe?
No, I'm just saying that with training different environments and exposing the athletes to different environments, they are learning to ski in a better athletic position through the environment, through the mountain, than so I haven't had to use that instant feedback mechanism to teach this is what it means to connect to the front of the boot. So we're doing it in different ways in that way. But on occasion, when you have to make fast progress with an athlete, I think the forward ski works really well to get them to understand that there's a connection and how you connect to that boot.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk a bit about what you're doing now. So this is your third year with Apex?
Yeah. Yep.
And can you just tell me about Apex? You're in France most of the year. And you're, yeah, tell me everything about it.
Yeah, so Apex is an international ski academy that started a few years back, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It's a purpose-built school, ski academy. It was funded by Hugh Osborne, who's a wealthy individual who questioned about skiing and just said there's got to be a better way to help athletes grow up in the mountains and get educated and learn to ski race at a high level. The goal is clearly to help athletes achieve the top step of the podium at the Olympics. And they said, so they went back and studied, you know, like, okay, what works, what doesn't work. They looked at a bunch of different sports. They hired Clive Woodward, who hired me. Clive Woodward was champion rugby coach. Ran the Olympic. He was the chief of sport for the Olympic Committee for GB. And then he started the academy and then brought me in to help with the Alpine kind of side of it. We're only Alpine. We have education and boarding and full conditioning coaches. And we have U12s, U14s, U16s, U20, U19s, and now a PG program / Europa Cup teams that are competing all the way through. So the goal is to give international athletes, it's not just UK, I mean, we have athletes from 24 nations, an opportunity to progress all the way through the system. And they can make the national team. If they have a national team to go to, they can go to university. But there's many nations that don't have a national team. They don't have a junior team. They don't have a Europa Cup team. So we're building those bridges for those athletes to progress there. We're based in Teen France. And Teen France is a high altitude ski area. We have a long season. So we're skiing from November through May easily here. And then June and July, or June into early July, is there's glaciers nearby that we can stay. So it's a, you know, an easy place to have a lot of volume of skiing. And then we also start in a base in Pozzo di Fossa, where our PGs are basing out of in the winter. And there's just amazing training and racing that goes along right there. And we're bringing our athletes, our U14s and our U16s, to Pozzo twice a year just to get a different experience from Teen France and to experience different cultures and learn to get comfortable in different environments. So we're doing that. And it's been really fun building. And we've gone from 33 athletes to now we're at about 155 with the PGs. And we have just a little bit of growth left, so we're kind of at capacity. And we, based on our applications, we see we'll definitely get there this year. It's been fun building something, and building something in an international way, bringing what I've learned at the highest level and bringing it back and trying to adapt that to what's appropriate for, you know, young people. And I've really, really enjoyed working with new coaches, different coaches from around the world, and teachers, and trying to bring that culture together, which is an integrated approach of, you know, a lot of athletic development, conditioning, coordination, and then skiing, and then academics, and that social component. And it's been fun.
That's cool. It must be cool to be able to build something, like start from scratch and say, I've learned all of this over the years. Now I can kind of really implement my vision.
I would say absolutely a lot of fun. And I would say through that, trying to implement, I'm actually personally learning a lot too, which I think is really inspiring. You know, I've just, you know, what I came in with the idea of what we're going to do to where we are now is different ideas. And you try things and you go, okay, that's working great. Let's go with that. Oh, we tried that. That plan is not working. Let's go a different direction. And really this process of learning together. And the one thing that I would say that's been the best learning is that we create this culture of that we are getting better together every single day. And that single message is so powerful that each athlete, each parent, each teacher, each coach, each conditioning coach, every single day, we're going to learn a little bit and we're going to get better together. And let's go on to the next day. Let's get better. That message right there, that kind of, you know, urgency to get better every single day, it's just been so fun to implement with U12s all the way up through Europa Cup athletes.
Yeah. I'm curious, like, you have all of this knowledge and experience. Hiring people must be difficult because you have to somehow find someone who you can either impart a lot of your wisdom to or be on the same page with, because you can't have your fingers in all, you can't have, you know, total control over all 155 athletes.
Absolutely. Hiring's been a big process. And fortunately we've been able to hire a lot of great coaches, and a lot of great staff, also dorm parents and teachers. And, you know, the main thing is that we're looking for is people that want to, you know, work and create relationship with athletes that have experience and have energy and enthusiasm to bring toes to the project. And finding the right coaches that have that energy and having the right putting them on the right seat on the bus has been a big work, and we're getting better at that every single year. And you know, we have great World Cup coaches that have come in, and you know, and I kind of really spend time with them and go, what inspires you? What do you want to do? Where do you want to express yourself as a coach? And they, you know, they can say, hey, I really want to do this. And we're like, great, here you go. Here's the expectations. Go run. And, you know, they create those relationships with the athletes and the teachers and the families, and they can run. And my role is really to kind of create that structure so that they can then do their passion and implement their passion with young people. And being able to do that, it's different type of people that want to do it with, you know, the best U16s. I mean, we have 40 some U16s. You know, some of them are the very best in Europe. Some of them are learning skills and really learning basic fundamentals. And we have different coaches that are able to do that appropriately. And that's been, you know, at first it's tough. Oh, I'm in this group. But no, just go through. And if you progress, you can progress through the groups. And we're seeing that go well.
That's cool. Something that I would probably tell my younger self is, when it comes to the sport of ski racing and long-term success, I used to think that it was about making sure I did my workouts in the summer and I watched video and I, you know, that was it. It was just these simple steps. And if you do them, you get better. And to me, I've found out the reality is it's a million things, and the biggest is just surviving the process and continuing to stay in love with the process and managing everything in life that involves picking yourself up after repeated failures. It's all of that. It's more of the process than it is all of these little things that I thought were the only things. And I don't know if I've expressed that correctly, but do you tell your skiers that, like, hey, it's there's a lot more to it, and it's a long process?
Yes, I want to ask you a question. So, What has, like, when you talk about the process, and you're understanding how you have to survive it, what is the spark or the fuel that keeps you wanting to just living that process, or keep, you know, getting up the next morning and just going, you know, head into it again? What is it?
I mean, some days it's hard to remember. There are some really tough days where I go, man, I could just finish school and go find a job. But I think back to the races that I've done well in, or just the races that I personally felt like I skied my best. And it's almost spiritual, the feeling. And I know that if I was working at a desk job or just going to school, I wouldn't be reaching those heights in terms of basically human experience. And then I also know that I'd rather, from spending time with a lot of people who are not skiing, and my, you know, stint injured and my stints not skiing, I know that I much prefer being out in the cold and just endlessly trying to get better, just running a slalom course 10 times in a row to get that perfect run. I much prefer that to anything else.
Yeah. So right there, you told me two things. You love trying to get better, which is goes back to what I'm trying to instill as a major part of the culture. And then the second thing is yes, you do wake up days where you don't want to do it. You're just like, you're tired, but you still do it. And you don't put much effort to think about how I'm going to do it, just because it's habits. And you think back as those habits, where did you learn those habits? You learned them at Green Mountain Valley School when you learn those habits at Green Mountain Valley School, then the D team. And then, you know, those habits are part of you. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do at Apex, is just creating those. You and I used to call them professional habits when we were at the Project 26. We call them winning habits at Apex. It's just like, you know, you pack your bags so that you don't have to put effort in, because there are days where, man, you don't have that energy, but you know, your bag's packed, you get in the van, you go, you get on the hill, you do your warm up, and all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, I love this. The outdoors, yeah, the fresh air, I love this. And then you find that little bit of energy to just work to get better. So those are the two things that we're doing, and you just expressed them yourself very well.
Yeah. Damn. I I like that idea of the habits. I hadn't thought specifically about that before, but yeah, I've been doing my core warm up and my bag checklist for probably 10 years now. So it's just kind of happened. As long as you keep your body in motion, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Another piece of wisdom you gave me once was the instant expectations. You told this to Andrew Weibrecht. You said the instant expectations enter your head, smash your head against a wall.
it's probably the phone call I get the most from former athletes is, "Sash, my expectations are creeping in again. Help." And it's the biggest killer of motivation is unrealistic expectations, or expectations that are going to come in, that a result's going to happen. And you see it over and over again in all walks of life. And, you know, the only thing you can expect of yourself is that you're going to get up and you're going to give your very best effort. And if that's your expectation and that you're going to overcome obstacles, you're going to take on challenges, and that you're going to, you know, struggle, you can expect that you're going to struggle and that you can embrace that struggle. Those are things you can expect of yourself. You're going to perform sometime and you're going to enjoy it. And as soon as you get an expectation of a result or, you know, something like that, that just gets in the way. And I think one of the things that I used to say, beat your head against the wall to knock it out, because it's not you. It's just a thought. And that would be what I'm teaching more now with athletes now, is that those things are normal. They do, those thoughts come in your mind, notice it, and then direct your focus, direct your attention, direct that mind to what you need to do to get better that day.
Yep. I like that. Oh, speaking of, mental practices, we're starting to end near the end of our interview here, but, I think when you were starting out with the team, you used to get the D team involved in Tai Chi, I think. Was that fair?
Yeah. When I first started with the team, we had a Tai Chi master. Master Fu was in Park City for the summer. And we did Tai Chi. And Brian Friedman and Ted Ligety and Jimmy Cochran Adam Cole. That generation got to do Tai Chi with Master Fu a couple days a week. And I remember Ted and Jimmy being like, "Who is this guy? What's this guy?" And the guy was in his 70s. And he was just like, "Try to hit me." And like, Ted and Jimmy went at him hard. And he just, you know, did his arms thing and just, he couldn't touch him. And that's when they were like, "All right, this guy's real." And we did. And I think, I don't know if it helped or not, but it was something that we did. And I think it's a way to, what is that doing? Is a way to help practice being present.
Yeah. Okay. Practice being present. Gotcha. Cause I was never sure, like, what was it about hip movement? What was it about? But it's just kind of a simple.
No, they're nothing about hip movement. Nothing. There's some guy that had put the thing together, tried to bring that somewhere else. And that was nothing to do with skiing.
That's right. There was a YouTube video. Some guy was trying to coin some term. Some hip rotation thing. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
which is, again, a technique that's not valid, not fundamental.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but being present of what you're doing is a fundamental performance.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Are you watching any guys in the World Cup? You mentioned Odermatt. Like, do you have any thoughts on what he's doing right now? Everyone, you know, is astounded by how many GSs he's won in a row and how unbeatable he is in GS.
I mean, he definitely gave everybody an opportunity in Schladming this week, and nobody stepped up to it, which was kind of a disappointment. Come on, guys, let's go. Let's get up there.
Yeah.
Take him on. What is he doing? He's expressing himself freely. He's able to do that because at the gate, he's got upper and lower body separation. He understands that clearly. He's doing it in super G and in downhill. Just at the moment of force, he's got good upper and lower body separation. So he's able to know that he's going to be in balance no matter what kind of turn, shape, rut, fall away that he's going to encounter. And then he's super fast. He's putting the pressure. If you look at him, he's bending the ski above the fall line or before the fall line. And he's going deeper than everybody else. You know, his line, if you look at Ted Ligety's line when he was on fire and Odermatt's line when he's on fire, very similar concept. I'd say the difference is Odermatt's getting off the ski earlier than Ted was on a 35 meter. I mean, obviously the equipment has a big part of that. But those are the things that he's doing. That's just, it's awesome. And it's fun to watch. And he's just playing. I mean, he's just playing. He's just out there having fun, which I think is what none of the other GS skiers are doing right now. And I think people are frustrated because it's not classical silhouette skiing. You know,
doesn't matter though.
It's technique. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I love watching it. I think it's phenomenal.
It's fun to watch, and it's fun to watch, like, what you said is he's skiing freely. You can see himself just skiing as hard as he wants to, as confidently as possible. And it's just, you know, it's hard to achieve that pinnacle in ski racing, but that's when you become unbeatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think in slalom right now, you know, I mean, it's just such a bummer. Kilda's out in speed, and there's, you know, there's been some major injuries, and I hope the best for Michaela, who just got airlifted out. I didn't see the crash, but you know, I think, but in slalom right now, there's a much more greater window right now for someone to step up and lead the show. And I think right now everybody's kind of jockeying a little bit, and no one's really just said, here, I'm going to go. So come on, guys.
It was Lucas Broughton last year.
It was. And Lucas is, you know, the master of freedom of expression.
Yeah.
Lucas. In his personal life and in on the slope. And he got constrained, you know, from the federation point of view, or something happened there. I don't know the inner details, but the master fearing just couldn't handle it anymore. That's why he's not doing it. But, like, you know, come on, let's go, athletes. Let's show some expression. Let's go. Let's charge it up. And I think what's cool in slalom, which you and I've talked about before, is that, you know, if you're athletic and you're training the right things, I think there's much more capacity for anybody to do it. In GS, it's harder to do. In GS, there's so much more rhythm and timing and finesse of rhythm and timing than in slalom. And I think in slalom, if someone's got the confidence to go and do it, they can do it.
Yeah, 100%. Sometimes you can just wiggle your way around a few gates without any sort of technique. Which is looking back at some of my old video, that's just what I was doing. It was just, you know, confidence and putting my nose down something, and it was not pretty, but it happened.
But who was judging it was pretty?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, it's been awesome to talk with you, Sasha. We're nearing the end of our time here, but at the end of interviews, I always give someone a opportunity to, number one, say how they would change the sport for the better if they could, if you were running FIS, and two, just a shout out, space to say anything you want. So how would you improve the sport? Anything you would change?
Running FIS. Ooh, that's a big one. I mean, I think in terms of just the sport itself, you know, I think there's every NGB puts a lot of rules and regulations in place to protect their system. And I think, you know, really, let's look at that, you know, and I say NGBs because FIS is made up of the NGBs. And I would really just encourage, you know, people to take a moment to look at the sport from the athlete perspective and that journey that an athlete is on, and understanding that those journeys are very different because it's a unique journey. And there's not one right road to the top. That's the one thing I've learned in the, you know, being in the sport and being blessed to work with so many different athletes, is that there's very many different ways to get there. And you have to find the right journey and the right stepping and the right road based on, you know, your own means, your own, where you've grown up, what you like, what you express. And I think FIS and NGBs need to look at that and go, hey, how do we create stimulus so that athletes can progress to the top in a fun way and in a joyful way, and it brings families along with it. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at.
So just specifically, like, you're just saying the rules of NGBs?
I
that
think
they
you
make.
think NGBs are they want to they have to hold some systems in place so that you know that they can select and stuff like that. But I think there's so much that goes into selection at a young age, at a very young age, U14, U16, and to qualify for this and qualify for that, that I think money is being spent in things that are not important. What's important is urgency to work to get better. And yes, you need those competitions to say, okay, this is where I'm at. And I need to use those competitions as a judgment, say, okay, this is where I need to get better. So you need those levels. But I think NGBs could look at it from a different perspective and just go, okay, what do we really need to do to progress our sport? And I've been fortunate enough to watch and have to work with 24 different NGBs of different nations. So I see all these different systems, and I'm realizing that it's not the systems that creates athletes. It's the journey that the athlete is on. And if they've been provided with the right opportunities for to train and race and get better, that's what's important. And you know, that's why I think you know FIS needs to encourage that. FIS needs to encourage that at the younger ages. You know, the Europa Cup system, the stepping stone from Europa Cup into World Cup, those are established systems. And you know, I think for the most part, as long as we're providing quality of venues and quality events and fair competitions, that's good. I think we need to look at how do we reach a broader market. And there's going to be a lot in terms of in the future, you know, okay, TV is going to change, and how do we reach the market, and how do we continue to reach a broad market to continue to inspire the next generation? I mean, those are things that you know, people that are much better at marketing need to answer, and you know, I would love to hear their thoughts on how to do that. But you know, my side is athletics, and you know, people development, and I think there's we should listen to we should learn to understand that where the athlete is instead of saying this is the system. So,
Yep. I like that.
yeah, and
And
then
then a
just
shout out.
shout
Anything
out.
you got?
I would just say, you know. I've been enjoying what I'm doing, and it's you know my family's been around Europe, but continuing to travel in Europe, and I'm so fortunate to have an amazing wife who's continued to support you know my journey and our journey as a family to travel between Italy and France and the U.S. and where we're going, and I just think you know I thank my family for continuing to be on this journey with me.
Definitely. That's crucial. Definitely. Well, Sasha, I really appreciate you visiting Arc City.
Thanks, Jimmy. Great to see you, bud.
I've got a short little niblet of skiing history nugget for you this time. I was brainstorming for stories with my uncle Ivo, and he sent me this about a Canadian named Brian Stemley. Ivo writes, quote, "I don't think that there is any world-class athlete who has come back from such a horrific, life-threatening injury, which happened at the 1989 Hahnenkamm, and performed again at such a high level, a second place at the Garmisch downhill in 1996. After that 1989 Kitzbühel crash, a coach saw Brian in the hospital with, wait, hold on a second. Skip ahead 15 seconds if you don't want to hear something graphic about Brian's injury. A coach saw Brian in the hospital with much of his intestines in a bowl between his legs. His pelvis had split and his left leg was almost torn off. In the downhill at the 1998 Olympics in Nagano, 9 years later, Brian looked like he was on his way to a sure gold when, in what seems like a momentary loss of concentration, he failed to make a gate near the bottom. The big guns like Hermann Maier and Christian Gadina had crashed badly. The eventual winner, Jean-Luc Chrétien, had set the best time, and Brian's lead was increasing steadily to over half a second when he missed that gate. Had he won 9 years after his horrendous accident, it would have been beyond a fairy tale. When Ruth and I were watching the downhill live, along with our cat, I slammed my hand down, yelled the F-bomb, and the cat went vertical. Brian told me years later that a friend of his threw his remote through the TV. Anyway, Brian is a great guy, and a superb FIS TV commentator who knows alpine skiing inside out. End quote. And that will just about do it for us this time. Until next time, don't forget to buckle your boots, tighten your power straps, and change your name to Katarina if you want a chance at qualifying for the Austrian women's slalom team. I'm Jimmy Krupka, and thank you for visiting Arc City.